I'm about to eat a Rice Krispie treat that is filled with crickets. Here I go.
From cricket-filled protein bars to barbecue-flavored worms, suddenly eating bugs is a trendy take on eating green.
Not too bad. You know, it's what we're going to be eating in 100 years. Better get used to it.
Although it's only now making its way in the U.S., billions of people around the world have eaten insects for centuries. Things like fried locusts in Thailand, water bugs in China, and ant larvae in Mexico, the home of the greatest number of edible insect species in the world.
Por algo le dicen el caviar. That's why they call this Mexican caviar. So Germán is digging through his taco for us to show us what the larvae look like.
Many insects are rich in a lot of good fats and protein and other important nutritional elements like calcium and iron and zinc.
So we figured if we can come up with a way to farm insects on a year-round basis, you could make a tremendous impact on commercializing access to this protein source, addressing, therefore, the overarching problem of food security.
But is it really as sustainable as it's made out to be, or even a good idea? This episode, we look at the companies and cultures bringing insects to our dinner plates.
The Future of Everything, a look ahead from the Wall Street Journal with Jennifer Strong.
People in Mexico routinely eat insects. Restaurants, street vendors, and markets there sell many varieties, both whole and in condiments. And I've tried a lot of things in the name of journalism, but I'm grateful the Wall Street Journal's digital science editor, Daniela Hernandez, volunteered for this assignment.
I'm walking through the San Juan market. We're going to be eating some insects here today. It's a typical Mexican market in downtown Mexico City. They sell fruits and food and vegetables, all sorts of things, including insects like ants' eggs and grubby gusanos de maguey, which I'm hoping to try. Okay, I've just stumbled upon some really interesting things.
Tenemos alacranes, cocopaches, saltamontes, acosiles, jumiles, gusanos de maguey rojos, blancos.
At this stand, they sell different kinds of beetles, ants, gusanos de maguey, which are the worm-like larvae usually found in mezcal bottles. Then there's scorpions. There's several trays of them on display. They're fried and look like the desiccated specimens you'd find in a museum. Others are covered in chocolate. ¿Me da a probar uno, señora? She seasons the scorpion with some lemon and salt that contains ground-up agave larvae. The stinger's removed to prevent it from poking a person's throat. All right, it's scorpion eating time. It has all 8 little claws on it. Technically, it's not an insect, but an arachnid, but I guess that's a technicality right now. It feels crunchy, and it's pinchers are staring me in the face. Here we go. It's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. It's very crunchy. My mouth feels very dry eating it. Luckily, they had a shot of mezcal to go with that. The pour had several red gusanos de maguey in it, and these usually feed on agave leaves. Bottoms up. At another stand, we see different varieties of scorpions and more ants. Germán López Riquelme, a neuroscientist who studies ants' social behavior, joins in. He's written a book about edible insects.
I work with insects. I work with ants. I study the brain of ants. When I went to collect them, I found out people collected them to eat them. And so, I started tasting them and to learn that they're eaten more than we realize. Here in cities, we see it as a curiosity, but the truth is that it's not. It's very well integrated to the gastronomy of many societies, especially in Mexico and Latin America, but you can also find them in other countries. So this isn't new. It's historic. Many people have eaten insects for a long time.
According to the United Nations, insects are part of the diets of some 2 billion people worldwide, and they're also a major source of protein, vitamins, and fatty acids. Riquelme points out some chicatana ants, a type of leafcutter ant that's becoming more and more popular.
Esta es la hormiga chicatana. Estas acaban de volar en...
These have just flown in June. They fly by the millions during their reproductive season and are prepared grilled. Normally, what people eat is the abdomen, the tail, because it has a lot of fat. The ovary is really developed and it's producing many eggs. Around the ovary, there is a lot of fatty tissue and it's really tasty. It's really good. I tend to eat the thorax, which has muscle, so it has more protein content, and it has two different types of flavors, muscle and fat. People tend to eat just the abdomen, which is the fatty part, and they make salsas, even patés, because it's so fatty.
We move on to a stand selling tacos filled with agave larvae, cockroaches, ants, and centipedes. I asked Riquelme what he thinks I should order. We decide to start with the agave worms.
¿Tienes gusano de maguey blanco? ¿Me dejas ver un gusano?
Riquelme asks the cook to show us a white agave larva. It's large, beige, and super fat. I remember my mom cooking these when I was a kid. Because of their increased popularity, food fraud is becoming more of an issue. That's when vendors substitute other cheaper beetle larvae and pass them off as gusanos. The cook throws them on a hot skillet. A few minutes later, aromas start wafting through the air.
It smells super fatty and bacony. They look like they're soft still, so they're not quite ready yet. Oh, one just squirted. A little fat came out of it.
That fat gives these critters the energy they need to transform themselves into butterflies. It's also what makes them tasty. In ancient times, they were used as tribute. Eventually, I'm handed a gusano taco.
They feel a little leathery. Let's see what they taste like. I'm about to wrap this taco. It's literally just a tortilla and the gusanos. A little chewy. And there's a hint of citrus, like something acidic in them. I'm not sure what that is. And while it smelled like bacon, it doesn't really taste at all like bacon.
The Wall Street Journal's Daniela Hernandez in Mexico City. Here in the States, companies are looking for ways to grow insects indoors instead of catching them in the wild, as is typically the case in countries like Mexico.
So if you go to Oaxaca, Mexico, for example, 1 kilo of grasshoppers is more expensive than 1 kilo of beef, pork, and chicken combined.
That's Mohamed Ashour, co-founder of Aspire Food Group, a company that's trying to grow hundreds of millions of crickets a year with the help of self-driving robots.
And the reason for that is because the amount of labor it takes to catch about 1,000 grasshoppers, which is the equivalent of 1 kilo, is immense. So we figured if we can come up with a way to farm insects on a year-round basis, and if we can modularize this technology so that you can essentially farm insects anywhere in the world, you could make a tremendous impact on commercializing access to this protein source and on addressing, therefore, the overarching problem of food security.
We're in his urban farm in Austin, Texas, which from the outside looks more like an office park than a farm.
Within our food production system, the biggest culprit is livestock production. We live in a world right now where, on the one hand, we have people who are living under $1 a day, who suffer from a type of malnourishment related to undernourishment. But then we have a lot of people who are also malnourished, but whose type of malnourishment is due to overnourishment.
Excluding sub-Saharan Africa, 3 times more people now die from obesity-related illnesses than famine.
So we have this dual sort of paradox where, because of our food sustainability track and how we produce food, it's not only impacting our health and our bodies, it's actually having a devastating impact on the environment. We use landmass equivalent to the entire continents of South America and Africa. We use about 80% of the world's fresh water. We've effectively deforested 91% of the Amazon to create room for soy and corn so that we can farm it for food and ethanol. And this is not getting better.
But he's quick to add, the goal isn't just an edible product. He wants people to enjoy it.
Because fundamentally, this is food. And it doesn't matter how great all of the attributes of sustainability are if it doesn't make people feel good about themselves when they eat it. And with food, it's extremely emotional.
Especially when it comes to something that's been so taboo for so long.
Because unlike other sources of livestock, insects in particular are a trigger in many people's lives psychologically, and for very good reason. Of the, let's call it, over 1 million species of identified insects in the world, less than 2,000 are actually considered edible. That means approximately 99% of insects are not good for you. So it's very rational not to want or like insects.
Crickets are typically the first insect a person tries. They're what you'd call a gateway bug.
We're fully vertically integrated, meaning we do everything from end to end within our supply chain. So we farm the crickets. We then process the crickets into a powder or into some kind of an ingredient. Today, we focus predominantly on a protein powder. And then finally, that powder is incorporated into consumer packaged goods that are then purchased and enjoyed.
We head inside to get a closer look at the farm. To be honest, I've eaten my share of cricket protein bars, and I have cricket flour in my kitchen. But as anyone who eats animal products knows, seeing something in a brightly colored wrapper is a very different experience than watching it walk around. The first stop is to grab a lab coat and goggles, then wash our shoes.
Yep, there are crickets in the footbath with me. And one running by.
There will be a few crickets. So.
Yeah, I figure. How many you say there are in here?
We probably have about 30 million.
I can see how one or two would run this way or that.
So we'll just kind of walk you over here. It's obviously quite loud in here because on aggregate, we probably have about 3 million crickets in this room right now.
There are 10 of these rooms filled with crickets at different stages of life. The climate is pleasant if you're a bug.
It's ranging from 88 to 90 degrees. Fahrenheit with about 50 to 60% humidity. The reason why it's hot and humid is because those are the optimal conditions under which insects thrive. You have to keep in mind that insects are ectotherms. They don't actually generate and maintain their body heat. In fact, that's why they're so efficient. A cow needs to eat 20 pounds of feed to give you 1 pound of beef, so it has to regulate its own body temperature, and that's very energy expensive. Crickets just accept the ambient temperature of their surroundings, and that becomes their body temperature.
Vertical farming makes efficient use of space by building up rather than out. Reporting has taken me into a lot of these farms, but for things like lettuce and basil, which stay put and don't climb around. But these crickets live under tight surveillance.
In each of these racks, we actually have data sensor systems. So what we do is we're capturing data on things like humidity. We're capturing sound to actually be able to record the intensity of the chirping, to be able to use that as a metric for determining appropriate harvest stages. We're capturing data on airflow, temperature, and things of that sort. So in this facility, we're capturing about 7 million data points every single day. So your ability to self-correct and learn is exponential, and it compounds from month to month to month.
Crickets have never been farmed on this scale before, so they're always experimenting to find the conditions that work best. And they've had to build their own equipment.
Every single system we have in this building, we've built in-house. In general, that's a very inefficient way to do things. You almost always want to outsource to others, but when you're building an industry that has no precedent and there's no off-the-shelf cricket harvesting equipment, you kind of have to build it yourself.
The company's engineers built 10-foot-tall feeder robots that self-drive throughout the farm. And these robots know just how much food and water to add based on sensor data. And unlike vertical plant farms that require copious amounts of light, crickets and robots thrive in darkness.
In the case of crickets and insects in general, they're certainly nocturnal creatures, so they don't actually thrive under intense lighting conditions. And so it's a very natural built-in cost reduction mechanism because we don't need to keep on lights unnecessarily, and that's actually a great way to take advantage of vertical agriculture. We can be more productive and have lower costs than somebody who's, let's say, harvesting crickets from the wild, for example.
Once the crickets are harvested, they're placed in a freezer, which humanely puts them in a sleep-like state. Then they're processed and packaged.
So is this vegetarian? I mean, in your view?
So technically, no.
Gabe Mudd is the other co-founder of the company. He's also a vegetarian.
But I will say that any ethical reason that people have to be vegetarian is consistent with the consumption of insects. If you're an ethical vegetarian because you're worried about food sustainability globally, then you're good. From an ethical perspective for humane treatment of animals, you're in an okay place. If you worry about food sovereignty, if you worry about people's access to food, if you worry about driving food prices higher and that having an impact in developing countries, for all these reasons, eating insects is perfectly consistent with being vegetarian.
But Aspire isn't the only U.S. food company looking at bug protein. And chances are, you've heard of this one.
I'm Brian Crowley. I'm CEO of Soylent. And Soylent is a meal replacement in a bottle. It was engineered really from the ground up to give you maximum nutrition with minimal hassle and waste.
Currently, the protein in each bottle of Soylent comes from soy.
Protein is one of the more expensive parts of any
product like ours, and certainly in our diets, protein is expensive as well. So I think all of those things kind of help us continue to evolve and think about what's next.
And you know where this is going.
We are working on bug protein in terms of, can it be sustainably produced? If you can do it, great. We'll invest in it and we'll focus on it and we'll look for great partners. But if we don't see a path in the next 5 to 10 years where it can be accessibly priced, then we don't focus there.
It could be a while until we see bug Soylent in your local 7-Eleven, which is where we're chatting in Midtown Manhattan. But we could get there eventually.
What kind of bugs, by the way?
Crickets. It's really difficult, obviously, to get over the thought. I've consumed a cricket once, and I can't say that I enjoyed it. But what's so important is we have to make this taste good.
So how did we get here? And why are we suddenly interested in making bugs edible and delicious? It goes back to a report published by the UN. It was the first of its kind, and it detailed the benefits of eating bugs.
Before this report came out, there were not crickets being farmed for human consumption in the U.S. So this report is really what sparked that industry. I'm Annie Gasparo, and I'm a food reporter for the Wall Street Journal. The overall findings were that insects are a great source of sustainable protein. And the basis for that is that many insects are rich in a lot of good fats and protein and other important nutritional elements like calcium and iron and zinc.
We've heard again and again that eating bugs is more sustainable for the environment. But how true are these claims?
There are conflicting studies that challenge those quoted in the UN report regarding some of the sustainability factors. Crickets and insects in general have lower greenhouse gas emissions. You also have the water side of it. The part that has been challenged is this feed to protein conversion. So how much they have to eat as crickets to generate the same amount of protein as cow or chicken.
One of the selling points of raising edible insects is that you don't have to feed them as much as other livestock. And there was some hope that crickets could be raised on compost, making them even more sustainable. But a study by UC Davis found that when crickets were fed organic waste, they all died before they were harvested. To be clear, just about anything biodegradable can be considered organic waste, including sewage.
When they were fed a combination of food waste that was processed rather than just straight organic waste, then their conversion rates were pretty much no different than chickens.
We're still trying to figure out what is the best diet for a cricket. Also, until the bug industry achieves scale, that affects price.
And right now, for instance, a cricket tortilla chip is more than double the cost of a bag of Doritos or regular chip. So I think that's a hurdle that the cricket companies are going to have. The same with the brownie mixes. When they're made with cricket flour, they have 13 grams of sugar per serving versus a Betty Crocker brownie mix would have 15 grams of sugar. So you're only saving 2 grams of sugar there. You're only getting 2 grams of protein more, and it's also more expensive. So it's the question as to whether the 2 grams of protein is enough to motivate people to eat bugs and enough to motivate people to spend twice as much on their snacks.
It might be a while until eating bugs goes mainstream, so we probably have some time to warm up to the idea.
Raw fish was something that, for much of America's history, was not something anyone would consider palatable. Lobster, back when the country was in its early days, lobster was seen as this disgusting sea creature that was fed to servants. And now it's a high-end, expensive cuisine. So there have been things that society has accepted after years of shunning it.
The Future of Everything is a production of The Wall Street Journal. This episode was produced by Laura Sim, Brian Gutierrez, Anthony Green, and Daniela Hernandez, with help from Annie Gasparo and Gabe Johnson. Our technical director is Jacob Gorski. John Wardock is the executive producer of WSJ Podcasts. Stan Parrish is the editor-in-chief of The Future of Everything. Thanks for listening. I'm Jennifer Strong in the newsroom in New York.
Yeah, les amos chicharron.
So he just said that he had a tarantula up on the counter. I asked him if it was, what he thought about the fact that it was sort of his pet, and then he ate it, and he was like, yeah, it's totally cool, no problem.